Today on Packet Pushers, we shall take a break from tech a little bit and share perspectives on interviewing. We'll talk about how to prepare to be interviewed, as well as discuss the details that an interviewer is looking for and what they're really thinking when they're asking you those seemingly convoluted questions. So I am Ethan Banks, and with me is Greg Farrow, who is talking to us from the land of temporary bandwidth poverty. Greg, say things to us from the world of 3G.
The land of internet savagery, where you roam the streets hunting open access Wi-Fi.
It really did sound appropriately terrible.
Yes, it did.
Please come and save me. The apocalypse is coming.
So for all of you listening, Greg really is on a not especially strong 3G connection from his house, where he is waiting for the bandwidth fairies to deliver a meaningful internet connection. It's not there yet, maybe in a couple of weeks. And so we're going to do the best we can with what he's got. So if he doesn't talk a lot and doesn't rant as much as normal, he wants to, believe me. It's all bottled up inside, but the 3G won't let it out.
It's a feature, not a bug. That's just the ranting.
Joining us on the call today, Keith McLaughlin and Joseph Warren. I'm going to ask each of these gentlemen to introduce themselves to the Packet Pushers audience, starting with Keith.
My name is Keith McLaughlin. I have been a network engineer exclusively since 2007 in the industry. Before that, with servers and other devices since about 1998. Today, I work at one of the larger enterprise / service provider networks, and I'm absolutely honored to be here with you guys today.
Well, I think the show was in part your idea. Thanks very much for emailing us with this and putting in all the show notes and everything. It's really great. Also joining Keith is Joseph Warren.
How you doing today? So I'm Joseph Warren. I've been in recruiting for about 15 years now and recruited at some of the biggest companies that are out there in tech: Google, Zynga, CBS Interactive, a couple startups. So I'm honored to be here as well.
So before we get into the conversation here, I want to lay down some assumptions. There's only so much time in a podcast, and some things we can talk about and some things that we can't. So some things that we're not going to talk about here, we're not going to get into where you post your resume, or, you know, when to update your resume, or, you know, how to handle emails for positions and doing your market research and all that stuff. Let's assume you've taken care of that, and we're at the point now where you're actually going to be interviewed. You've got something on the schedule. You got to do some homework now. You got to do some research. You got to get yourself ready so that you're prepared when you walk in the door to actually be interviewed. So, Keith, let's start with you. As you've done some of this preparation for being interviewed, how do you do your research? How do you figure out some information about the company you're going to be interviewed by?
Well, luckily, for the last few years, I've been on the receiving side of a lot of the invitations. And the beautiful thing about that is you actually get a chance to find out who wants to talk to you, why they want to talk to you, and you can kind of bleed some more questions out of the person that's contacted you, like, well, what technologies are they looking for? What's the title of the position? And you get this information because you take that, and that helps start your hunt for information. So for me, luckily, you usually get a lot of information about the midsize or the larger companies. You can find anything you want to know about that position through sites like Glassdoor and LinkedIn are very good sources. But the best thing you can ever find is the information on the person that's interviewing you. If I get a name, in this case, let's say Joseph Warren is interviewing me, I can actually go to LinkedIn and get an idea of his background. That gives us things to talk about to give me a better feel for the person that is already inside that company that wants me to be inside that company. What we forget a lot of times on this side of the interview is that we're also making sure the company's a good fit for us, not just the company making sure we are a good fit for them. So looking at the people that you're going to be talking to, looking at reviews of the title of the job, all feed into giving you a better perspective and giving you some information about the company before you walk in the door. A lot of people just sit back and wait for the interview. And for technical people, that's just not smart. You have to research yourself, the company, any piece of information that you can get your hands on, because that can come up in the interview.
So I'll give you an interviewer perspective on that. For me, I expect that the person who's sitting in front of me interviewing for the job is there not just because they want a job. I mean, maybe that's the most important thing. You know, they're looking to, you know, improve their career, et cetera. but they kind of want to work for this company as well. It's interesting to them what the company does, what it makes, or the services that it offers, and that they've done a little bit of homework. I'm not really impressed if I go, so you want to work for our company. What do you know about us? What have you done? And they go, nothing. Recruiter sent me here. You know, that's horrible. It's not cool.
That's horrible.
Joseph, yeah. What's your take?
So you guys are absolutely right. The one caveat I'd like to make to that is that oftentimes, and this is coming from a recruiter's perspective, when candidates are referred into that role, sometimes the managers don't know, and it's a different take from the candidate's perspective. Oftentimes, they may not know about the company. They may not know a lot about the role. They were referred to the role from a friend, from someone else that worked inside the company. So it's a tad different in that aspect. So I just want to make sure that people are aware of that, because oftentimes I deal with managers and they will say that, and then I have to remind them that it is a referral, and oftentimes they come in pretty cold, believe it or not. But other than that, you guys are absolutely correct about everything you said. I could not agree with it more.
And in that situation, I would just expect the candidate to explain the situation. I was going to dig in. I just didn't have time. It all happened pretty quickly. And, so here I am. Even sure. Then, you should have some idea of, you know, the company, even if it's just to say, well, I only had a time to do a quick Google search, and it looks like you guys do X. Am I about right? And at least you know there was some interest there.
Sure. That's right. I agree with that. I don't think there's any excuse to come in absolutely cold, because there's not a company out there that doesn't have a website with an About Us page, and that About Us page can give you enough information. I mean, look like you've at least looked into the company.
And you mentioned a couple of sites here specifically. So besides the company's own website and the About page, you mentioned LinkedIn and Glassdoor. A lot of sites or a lot of companies do have profiles on LinkedIn that will give you quite a bit of information and link to some employees that are there, which can give you a better sense about what's going on within the company. And then Glassdoor, I haven't been on that site in a while. Last time I was up there, it had comments from people that have worked for or with the company and what their experience was and what they thought. So you can kind of get a feeling for the culture of the company was kind of how I took it. Is that still what they're doing? Yeah.
Yeah. And they actually are now trying to recruit or, you know, have a jobs type site as well. But the main benefit of Glassdoor is seeing what other people had to say about the company who may have passed through the company and be somewhere else, or that they're still there. So that's why Glassdoor is very useful for that.
Yes, it's an invaluable tool. Again, just like he said, you get a great idea and feel for the role, the types of questions that the interviewers have asked over a period of time, and even sometimes how people have answered it. So it gives you a really good perspective of how to prepare for the interview correctly.
So one thing I want to add to the question here is it really necessary to care about the employer? Now, there's a couple of different ways to look at this, and that is that if you're going to work for a company which is slightly on the side of unethical, let's say it's a tobacco company or an arms manufacturer, and you might be personally anti-tobacco or personally against guns, for example, you need to make decisions about whether you want to work for that company before you get to the interview. It's one thing not to care about the company particularly, like, you know, if there's a company that makes milk for a living and turns it into yogurt or whatever, you may actually not care too much about milk or yogurt. It's quite one thing to work from. But there's a moral aspect to jobs that you take, and you need to be well prepared to have thought about whether you want to be working for a company that does this thing before you get through the door.
I can agree with that.
And I would agree with that too. You know, maybe you don't want to work for someone that manufactures alcohol products. Maybe that would bother you, or someone in the adult industry. You know, you're the data center person, and all that you're serving out of that data center is pornography. Maybe that would not meet with your ethics. Well, you wouldn't want to walk in the door at the interview and find that out and go, wow, this ain't going to work out at all.
Yeah. Right. But you know what? If you don't research your company, you're setting yourself up for a situation exactly like that.
Yes. It's not necessary that, certainly in my experience, I've never been too much worried about who employs me. The point here is that you need to be well understood. If you have moral objections to certain things in life, make sure you research the company. The second part is you don't necessarily have to love the company to do a good job. One of the great things about IT infrastructure is that you are actually doing a job that has almost limited relationship to what the company does. So if a company manufactures widgets or cars, you don't have to be a car nut to work there. You're an IT guy. Your job is to do IT. You don't have to love what the company does. although for some people that may or may not be necessary. I think you're misguided to actually care what a company does. A company is just a machine. It's like an engine in a car. It exists to produce a service or a product. But your job as an IT professional is to deliver IT. But, you know, make sure you understand where on the spectrum do I have to love the company? Does the company do something that I find morally repugnant to who cares what the company does? They're paying me money. Make sure you're aware of which part of those you want to be.
I agree. You do not want to start that process at the interview. You don't want to walk in the door and begin to think, do I want to work here? Is this the right kind of company? How long do I want to be here? What can they do for me? It's important to know, and this comes down to studying yourself, it's important to know what your overall goals are. And that helps you define how that company fits or doesn't fit with those goals. Now, it has nothing to do with whether or not you'll take the position. Maybe you need the position. Maybe you need the experience. Maybe it's just a year or 2 years, and that's fine. But bottom line is you have to know what you're going for beyond that position.
We could belabor this point a lot longer, but one more thing popped in my head that's worth mentioning. It's kind of good to know if the company's been in the news lately for good or bad reasons. Yes. You know, there's a company you could work for who was just named and given some business award for outstanding service, or they're an up-and-comer or some such. And then there's companies who they just had a new competitor enter the space that's going to kill their product line, and there's a good chance they're going to be out of business in a year. That may or may not bother you because you can just go out and get another job, but maybe that's if you're looking for stability, maybe they're not the most stable company in the world. So again, doing your homework. All right, let's move on from that point. Doing your research on the company, Keith, you would also talk about doing your research on the interviewer. And LinkedIn is personally my favorite site for this. Most folks have a LinkedIn profile that they keep up with. They make connections to different folks, and you can find out a little bit about their work history and what they're all about and get a sense of who's in front of you, which if you're a cocky IT hotshot looking for a new gig, you may not have a lot of respect for the person you're sitting in front of if you're ignorant of who they are. And a little bit of homework on their LinkedIn profile or maybe even a Facebook page could reveal to you that this person is someone you better have a healthy respect for because they've been around, they know what's going on, and you're not going to be able to pull any crap with them. They actually know what's up. They're not just some generic mid-level manager trying to fill a seat and get a butt in the cubicle to start cranking out work.
Yeah, the one thing that I can speak to that where that's really helped me is we can go back to 2011, and I was actually interviewing with one of the Fortune 5 companies in the world. And because I had done some research on the people that would be interviewing me, I was able to ask the kind of questions that they were completely impressed by. I was able to ask, what is this entry on your LinkedIn? And tell me more about that organization. It sounds very familiar to another organization that I've done charity work with. Another guy, I was able to ask him, like, you had a very prominent career on track at this company. Why did you come here? What makes this company so attractive so you can tell me why I should be here? And these guys literally, the quote from the interview was, you sure are polished. And it's not that I was all that polished. It's just that I took the time to look at the people who were going to be looking at me. I look at it like a mirror, not just a one-way mirror. I literally want to know more about them so I can get a good feel for the people I'll be working with every day. They want to do the same.
Well, it's funny you put it that way, because if you can find some thread of commonality between yourself and the people that you are going to be interviewing with, that can make a bond. And sometimes that's what an interviewer is looking for. They're looking for not just the skills and not just their ability to do a job, but am I going to get along with this person? How are they going to fit into the work environment? And if you've got this common thread, or like you had mentioned, Keith, you're familiar with someone I used to do some charity work for. You know, okay, all of a sudden there's this link there that makes you seem more real and more human to them and not just kind of a piece of meat in the chair they're trying to get
through. That's right. And you know, what's interesting about that is as technical people, we tend to focus 95% on the tech and 5%, if any, on soft skills. But those soft skills can literally be the definition between getting a position, getting an offer, and not. So I would encourage anybody who is great with OSPF and ISIS and all the BGP that they can be, take some time to invest at least half that time into what are interviewees looking for. Another site is good at inc.com, because they actually have interviewer questions, interviewee questions. They give a perspective on what they may be looking for through that question. You'll have articles that say, hey, these are good things to ask if you want to find out, you know, the way that person thinks or the way that person operates. And those are good things to know going in the door. So don't make it just technical. That's where you will just be a piece of meat. Anybody can set up OSPF or BGP. They want somebody who can explain what they're doing in layman's terms, who can make people feel comfortable, they can work well under pressure. All of those things are very important.
Let me expand a little bit on that. There are times when companies are actually looking for hardcore nerds who have no communication skills, but that's only about 10% of jobs. Quite honestly, the rest of the time, the person in charge is a manager who is often non-technical. Now, don't get me started on the topic of non-technical managers. You wouldn't appoint an accountant who wasn't a certified accountant, right? But for somehow in IT, it's perfectly acceptable to put a project manager in as a IT manager who's got zero technology skills. That's a different rant for another day. The point is that 9 out of 10 jobs rely on you to be part of a team, to work with the people next to you, to get along with storage people, hard as that might be, and to communicate towards the business or the other business units or things like that, right? So the ability to communicate is actually about is a numbers game about getting into more jobs more often, and generally people pay more for communicators. People who can communicate can often execute or deliver a result, or better still, let me qualify that a bit further. You give the perception that you gave a result because you could communicate that you did it. So sometimes there's a bit of a difference here. Being able to communicate and all the things that you know we were just talking about, that's about being able to communicate to the manager and communicate to the person across the table that you are the right person to the job. Your technology skills are important, but so is your communication skills.
I agree 100%.
Joseph, how do you coach candidates that are heading in for a position on these soft skills?
You know, that's a great question. And what I often tell them to do is keep it simple, right? When you answer a question, you want to give your overall answer, how you would normally answer any question. Then you want to follow up and say something like, is that what you were looking for, to give more detail? So, there's so many different approaches. I find that normally when you do that, use the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. It normally helps. Show your personality. And just like the advice that you gentlemen have given earlier, you want to find a common ground, some way that you guys can relate. And part of that's going to be on the interviewer as well, to make the interviewee feel comfortable and different things of that nature. But in general, you want to make sure that you keep it simple with most of the answers. What happens a lot of times is people will ramble, or they'll give too short of an answer, which comes across in both cases as being a bad communicator. So you want to get your point out. You want to follow it up with details and great examples, and then move on to the next question.
Hi, everybody. This is Drew Conry Murray from Packet Pushers, jumping in to tell you about Telari, a sponsor for today's show. Here on Packet Pushers, we've talked about the evolving and sometimes confusing SD-WAN market. Telari is here to bring clarification. Telari has been making WANs better for 8 years now, creating a thinking SD-WAN that makes the network smart and responsive, adapting in real time to changing conditions. What's Telari's secret sauce? Telari's patented approach puts intelligence in every packet and at every endpoint, performing true one-way measurement of every data packet coming and going. They identify packet loss, jitter, and the failure of any one network path, and then they use all the network's capacity to reroute packets and keep your data flowing no matter what. With Telari, mission-critical apps like VoiceOver IP and VDI take priority and always deliver. Your less time-sensitive traffic like file backups fall in line. Do you want to know more about how Telari's thinking SD-WAN turns your bandwidth into brainwidth, upticks your uptime, and frees up your own time to be brilliant? Visit them at telari.com and listen to the Packet Pushers conversation with John Dickey, Telari's co-founder and CTO. Telari is the proven SD-WAN solution that started in the SD-WAN space before it was even labeled as such. Check them out at telari.com. And now, back to Ethan and Greg.
So let's move on to questions then. And, we're still in the research phase here. You're getting ready to be interviewed. You can do your homework on the company. You can do your homework on the interviewer, and then be prepared to walk in there and have those that human conversation, because you've done some homework there and can find a point of common ground. Well, what kind of interview questions could you actually research and prepare for? And Keith, you'd had a bunch of notes here about how you might do that.
Well, going back to Inc.com has probably been the best site to give you different types of questions. And what I mean by that is the last company I interviewed with, I remembered, I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't checked Inc.com, so let me go look. And it gave me a question that completely threw me off, but it's the exact kind of question that you might get in the interview. And the question, as I recall, because it scared me so much that I can't forget, was, who is one of your mentors or who is someone that you look up to and why? And at the time, I didn't want to get somebody that they didn't know. I was trying to think like, well, is it this Martin Luther King? And do I know enough about Martin Luther King? Am I going to pick somebody that they know more about than I do? And then I look like an idiot. So bottom line, that is something that I should have done before I ever walked in that door. But that's one of the best places to start looking for questions. You can normally run a Google search with your position and add interview questions, and you'll normally find a flurry of different sites. And the point here is not to try to find the exact question that you're going to be asked, but get an idea of the type of questions or the way the questions are going to be asked so that you know how to mentally think about, if I get hit this direction, this is the approach, or if I get this direction, this is the approach. Because all those things mentally prepare you, kind of like working out, to walk in and hit it out the park. So you can't miss by just Google, and Inc.com are probably the best two sites to do that. And of course, if it's technical, then you probably want to start with Packet Pushers, and that's always a good start.
Nicely done.
Nicely.
Thanks for that.
The one thing I will say is...
Cha-ching! $50 coming your way.
What I will say about that is, and that's great advice, what I tell most of the candidates that I work with is start with your own resume, meaning if it's on your resume, it's fair game to ask. So when we're looking at resumes, at least from a recruiter perspective and from the managers that I work with, we look through the resume and start asking questions based on the skill sets that they say they have, right? So if you're saying that you have background in XYZ, and then you're asked a question about that and you're unable to talk about it in a meaningful way, then it blows everything up. So most of the time, most of the questions are derived directly from the candidate's own resume or what they may have said on their social profiles like LinkedIn or even GitHub or something like that. So that's where we normally start. And that's been my experience at all the companies I've worked at, Google, like I said, Zynga, GoPro. It's been that way every place I've ever been for the most part.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely, Joseph. I have used that technique many times. If it's on your resume, I'm going to ask you about it because I want to see how deep the rabbit hole goes. Oh, you say you know EIGRP. Well, what do you know? Well, tell me about an EIGRP network you set up. Okay. Well, when you did this, did you have to redistribute into some other routing domain? Oh, you didn't. Okay. Or how many routers were in that domain? Exactly. Well, how did you control? I'll just drill in and drill in and drill in until they run out of gas.
Right. That's right.
Another thing that I'll just put out, a common mistake that people make on their resumes in the networking world, they'll put MPLS on their resumes. And say, what do you know about MPLS? I don't know anything about MPLS. But they had to connect a router to an MPLS network one time that the provider was using MPLS. They weren't using MPLS. It happened to be MPLS, so they were told. They didn't know squat about MPLS, but yet they're putting that on their resume as a skill, even though all they did was just stand up an IP connection. So be careful about that, guys. Don't exaggerate on your resumes what you do if you're not prepared to talk through it. You'll snow some people, and other people will be like, oh, they're MPLS engineers, huh? This will be a fun interview. I can't wait to start asking them questions. And then you find out they don't know much of anything. Put context around your skill sets and what you're saying you actually have, so the person reading your interview knows what you've actually done with the technology.
And sometimes claiming things like that can cut you out of a job. So if they're not looking for someone who knows MPLS, but you have it, they might think, oh, maybe he knows a bit too much.
I agree.
Maybe he's too good for the role.
Yeah, it can go both ways. And that's something you really can't predict, because if you're interviewing someone that is a technical person on the same team that you're going to be on, and you show them more technical depth than they have, then now you're a threat. But if you're interviewing with a manager who wants that same technical depth on his team, now you're an asset. So that one's hard. That one's real difficult.
If you're a network engineer who does want some interview questions that can help with this, if you punch into Google network engineer interview questions, on the front page of Google is an article I wrote that ended up on Network Computing, I think, that talks about four questions that I've asked people and covers some of this stuff as well. That was at the time quite popular. I think I wrote it a few years back, but it's still out there if you're interested in that. And again, don't think of them as specific questions, but as Keith was saying, as the types of questions you might get asked. I'll just give one of them as an example. I love to ask people, get up on the whiteboard, grab a couple markers, and draw for me a network that you've worked on and explain it as you go. And I'm looking for like five different things in that. I want to see their communication skills. I want to see their ability to how well they actually understood a given network. I want to see their drawing ability. Again, going back to communications, I want to see how well they think on their feet because I've really put them on the spot. I'm digging in deeply there. And it also acts as a pivot point where I can say, oh, okay, so draw, you know, which of those switches on there would you say are the core of the network? And then tell me what that means. And then, you know, then I just dive in. Again, that's a type of question. You might not get that exact question, but you get something like it where someone wants to explain something that you've dealt with. They're looking for more than just the technical stuff. It's not all about your acronyms. It's again, we've talked about this today already. It's also about your ability to be a human being and communicate and get along with other folks. So,
you know, one thing that's real useful there is if you have another technical friend or another network engineer, have them give you a mock interview. They're probably going to drill you literally the same way, trying to see how far you can go, trying to see how deep your knowledge is. And that's going to get you ready for the pressure of, oh yeah, I need to look that one up. Or maybe I need to research, you know, that technology more. And another site that was very popular because of the cheat sheets was Packet Life. That site was everywhere a few years ago with all the general protocol pages where you can go get the port and you can get, you know, the broadcast address, and all that information was available through Packet Life. And I think he's still putting out material today. So that's a great site for technical research.
Yeah, it's Jeremy Stretch's site, packetlife.net. Yeah, absolutely fantastic resource and well organized, where it's easy to find things by heading and summary sheets and everything, just like you said. Mm-hmm. And right, it's got tons of information. Yeah, as far as I know, Stretch is still adding content to that site. I don't think with the volume he once was, but it's still there and quite valuable.
Well, I think he helped spin up a stack networking domain, and I know there's some activity there, but I don't go very often like I should. But I know for a while he was working on that. But it's still really good research there.
I remember that, right? It took a while to get, what was that? Is it stackoverflow.net? I've forgotten the name of the site.
I think it was Stack Overflow, but it's like they have different areas. And I want to say
StackExchange.com.
Stack Exchange, that's it.
Thank you.
That is it. Thanks. But it's still useful, you'll find. I know I ran a search recently over error message, and it brought me to that area, and I know he was helping spin that up. So maybe he puts more material there. I don't know.
Packet Life, of course, Packet Pushers, a lot of the community bloggers are adding a lot of detailed articles about something technical they're working on. Some recent ones that have come up have been on MPLS, a bit on traffic engineering, several things on BGP I've seen come up, some DMVPN contents come up recently. And so on. So there's some detailed articles there if you're just looking to brush up on some general tech. Keith, you mentioned the Routing Bits book.
Oh, Routing Bits is a book that I absolutely love for its brevity. It is straight to the point. It is nothing but, look, this is how it advertises. This is the address it uses. Thank you. And it moves on to the next topic. And I actually had a chance to meet with the author, Ruhan, and he is a really down-to-earth guy. I'm not sure if he's going to do a version 5, but anything for a quick, you know, overview of a technology, his book is great. Routing Bits is excellent for that. And the technology hasn't changed that much. So even if it's not CCIE version 5, to keep you abreast of the technologies you're likely to be interviewed for, it's a great resource for that. Great resource.
Yeah. I'll mention just a couple of points on getting drilled in an interview. If you're worried about, you know, technically getting, I have to know the bits in the header that accomplish X or I'm going to fail the interview. Well, not exactly. Like I said, I'll want to see how deep the rabbit hole goes with you. Yep. And I'll just kind of keep poking at you until you run out. Most candidates will run out before I do, but I have my limits too, obviously. And really, it's just to see your suitability for the job and, you know, how I also want to see how you handle failure. So if you get to a point where you don't know anything anymore, do you get red in the face and flustered and kind of angry or look at the ceiling or, you know, get tense?
Because, yeah, you want to work with that guy.
Exactly. Or are you kind of like, you ran me out, man. I don't know any more than that. I know where I'd find the information. I'd go to this book or I'd check this website or I used to know that, but I've kind of forgotten, but I know how to find it if I needed to. Cool. That's all I want to see. I'm not looking that you know all of this off the top of your head because, for the most part, none of us do. I just want to know, what have you had exposure to? What have you worked with? And then, again, that failure scenario, how do you deal with it when I finally break you? So, well, that sounded harsh, but...
Yeah, it's real.
I will break you.
It happens. It happens, but I think one thing that I know happened is I had a talk with a guy today who was a triple CCIE, and at the time he was only had one, but I asked him a question that I thought was simple. 5 minutes into it, my eyes glossed over, and literally I was lost from that point on, and I just started taking notes. I'm like, well, look, you lost me back here, but these are the notes of the things I'm going to go look up, because I was completely lost,
So, now, you mentioned one more resource here, Keith, CCIE or die.com, and then there's a CCIE route switch quick reference kit.
I believe that one is actually the mind map. Yeah, this is the mind map. And even though this is great for another quick snapshot over something like I'm looking at right here is PPOE, the beautiful thing about a mind map is creating it yourself. If you're really trying to remember something, you should probably go create your own mind map to appeal to those different areas of the brain that help you retain new information. So it's good if you only have a few minutes on your phone or your tablet and you want to take a look at a technology. You'll get a lot of information here, very similar to routing bits. And I picked these resources because they were that quick. You're not getting the complete history of the protocol, where it started and how it evolved, but you are getting great technical definitions that you can take into an interview and be able to have a conversation about. But one thing that both of these resources don't give you, that again we can point people back to packet pushers, is they don't get the information on some of the new emerging technology, segment routing, SDN, SDN-WAN. These are the kind of things that if you can go into an interview and show that you're already researching these possible outcomes, you're instantly more valuable to that company because they don't have to do all the research you've already done.
On the assumption they've kept up with the emerging technologies too.
They probably haven't. That's why you're so valuable.
And if you can make that point to them, well, you're talking about things that they haven't heard of that could be valuable to the business, as long as you don't sound like some smarmy, self-assured hotshot who's just really impressed with himself or herself. Well, that's good, because for exactly what you were just saying, Keith, you're walking in the door with knowledge that could benefit the business, and that's a valuable thing.
Exactly. You have to think about it from the business perspective. They know that there are technologies out there that may help them, but they may not have the resources or time to put somebody into looking into that. So once you walk into the door, then you're half of the ramp up that they wish they could put into the other resources that they've already over-allocated to other things. So you come in with a wealth of knowledge into something they want to investigate, and they didn't have to do anything but hire you.
Well, let's move from the research phase, and you've done your homework, you're ready for this interview, you think, and now we're getting close to game day, as you put it in the notes here, Keith. The day before the interview, what would you recommend folks do?
I would check the news. I would see if possibly, you know, you just filed for an IPO and someone is claiming that you're infringing on their intellectual property. You want to be able to go in there and have a conversation that is above technical to show again that you've looked into the company with a close eye because you're seriously considering that company. I would search the news. I would also research a stock, because a lot of times if you go to Google's finance.google.com, you'll have stories or news reports associated with moves on the stock. Well, those news reports are, again, the real meat of what you want to take to that interview. And maybe you can ask your interviewer some that they haven't even kept on themselves, because they're inside the company. They don't really care as much. If you can ask them, you know, like, hey, what do you think that's going to do for this product line? Or what do you think that lawsuit is going to do for our development? And if you're on the development team, that shows that you're not just taking a high-level look at the company. You're taking a deep level because you really want to know how that's going to affect you. So day one, I'm on Google, I'm checking stocks, and I'm getting ready for the game.
Yeah, another point that I would add is more pragmatic, which is make sure you know where you're going, and especially if it's an area that you're unfamiliar with. If you can make the time to drive by the building, go check out what the parking situation is. How are you going to get there? What's it going to take to get there on time? What if it's an inner city job that you're downtown, you're not driving, you're taking a cab, or you're taking the T, something like that to get to wherever it is that you're going? Do you know the process? Do you know the schedules you need to know? Because what you don't want to do is be late. You do want to be on time for an interview. If I'm interviewing you and it's at 10 o'clock in the morning, I expect that I'm sitting down with you at 10 o'clock in the morning. Not that you're just arriving at 10 and you're checking in with the receptionist and you're 3 minutes late and you know, it's like, come on, man, I'm on a schedule here. If I'm interviewing you, it's probably not just you. I may have other people that are waiting behind you or other meetings to get to, et cetera. I really do expect that you're there on time. Now, I understand things happen, but make that effort to do your homework and find out how it is that you're going to get to the building on time. And a little bit early is great. A little bit late is annoying.
Great.
That's absolutely excellent advice. The one thing I will tell people is that in an attempt to be impressive and get there on time, sometimes they show up 30, 40 minutes early. And I tell at least my candidates that I work with, that's almost as bad as being 10 minutes late, 20 minutes late, because then you're inconveniencing the interviewer. So if you find yourself getting there early, just make sure to entertain yourself before you actually come in and check in, because when you do it that early, it's not as helpful as you might think. But absolutely, you want to be there a couple of minutes early on time to get it started. But 20, 30 minutes early is going to be more of a detriment to you.
Don't forget about morning commute traffic. If you have a morning interview, you get there the night before doing like a survey so you know where the building is and stuff. And it's easy to get to for whatever reason. And then the morning, it's like, oh, crap, the traffic is really backed up. It's going to take me a lot. Don't forget that. Just, you know, think about those kind of obvious things. On game day, if you will, where, you know, it's the day you're headed in for the interview, what do you wear? Because there's a lot of, you know, changing attitudes in corporate culture about what you should wear. It used to be all dress up, suit and tie. We kind of went to business casual. Now some companies are t-shirt and jeans. They hardly care what you wear. What do you guys recommend wearing for the actual interview?
This depends on the company. And the funny thing about this is the last interview I had, this came up. I planned on wearing a suit. I wanted them to think I, you know, wanted this position. I wanted to be, you know, present myself in a very professional, uber professional manner. So I wore this suit. The guy interviewing me, one of them had flip-flops, plaid shirt, and a t-shirt that literally you couldn't read any words on it. It had to be one of the oldest shirts in this guy's wardrobe.
Very hipster.
It was, I just like, how did this happen? You know, what did I do wrong? But bottom line, they told me that, look, we're not as concerned with how you look as we are with what you know. But I was like, yeah, right. You're just trying to get me to come in there comfortable so everybody else can have on a suit. And sure enough, they were telling me the truth. This patent-holding guy interviewing me literally was in flip-flops like, are you okay? Are you comfortable? And I'm in this tie, starting to almost sweat. And like, yes, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you. I'm fine. So it depends on where you're going. You can normally ask either your person you're interviewing with or your recruiter if that's the case. They will give you some guidance on what to wear, but it's usually subjective.
I was just about to say, use your recruiter as a resource. They would know better than anyone else. Normally, you're not going to have that exposure to some of the people that you'll be interviewing with early. So use your recruiter as a resource for, you know, the types of questions that you might be asked, maybe some prep things that you could cover, and especially about the dress for the interview day. They're going to be more than happy to help you because it's going to benefit them as well. So use them up because it's going to behoove you in the end.
I'll also add that you can. It's better to be overdressed than underdressed. So like Joseph said, ask your recruiter. If you're not working with a recruiter, you're working direct, talk to the person who's you worked with to schedule the interview and find out what the corporate culture is. What do people wear? What's normal? And dress to match. You know, if they say it's business casual, you know, walk in a nice pair of khakis and a, you know, a nice tidy shirt. And, you know, and walk in with that expectation that you're matching the corporate culture. I've always asked and never had an experience where they were screwing with me just trying to see what I'd show up with. I always wear what they tell me to wear, and it's been fine. I haven't had an issue there. But if anything, I'd rather overdress than underdress, just so that they know I did take this seriously, because I have had interview candidates that have sat across from me who it's like, dude, you're a slob. What is wrong with you? Why do you not care? Did your dad send you in? Why are you here? It sends a bad message if you really look bad. And to add to that, be well groomed. You should have showered that morning. Your hair should look nice. Your beard and mustache, if you sport facial hair, should be well trimmed. You know, keep your fingernails clean and tidy. And you shouldn't smell bad or have any stains on your clothing or anything like that. Because all of those things say something. You mean, I hear you guys laughing in the background. I'm sorry. I've met these people. I have interviewed people with the breath of death. Like, wow. Did you just drink the coffee after the mushroom and egg omelet? What were you thinking before you walked in here to say hi to me and then breathe that green gas on my face? Oh, you're disgusting. Really? And all I want to do is get them out of there.
That's scary.
Okay, let me give you some weird stories. First of all, my experience, no disrespect intended, is that recruiters generally can't tie their shoelaces very well.
Oh, that's very hurtful. That's very hurtful.
Yes, that's okay. Is it true? No, I'm just joking. First of all, not every interview happens in an office. Probably the best job I ever got was actually an interview in a bar, and it really started inside after about the fourth beer. And it was kind of accidental, and I didn't kind of realize, but that's a very successful way to job interview. I know that's not very common in America, where people are really uptight and rarely have a good moral attitude towards, you know, openness and stuff like that. People in America tend to have this very military approach to recruiting, sit in office, have formal engagement, speak formal language. And this whole process is very military in America. In Europe, it's very different. It can happen in a coffee shop. It can happen in a bar. It could happen airport lounge. I've done interviews in cars as we are driving between sites, all sorts of things. There's no actual scenario for sitting in an office and having a discussion. Now, that said, I've also been in interview situations where there are five people on the other side of the table, and all the preparation in the world will not prepare you for sitting with five idiots, three of them who are normally manager people, one of them is probably from HR and is really actually struggling just to breathe and to open their mouths at the same time, because all they're there for is to tick boxes in the HR and make sure that nobody's rights are being repressed or that you're not some sort of gay lesbian whale who needs administrative support or, you know, something like that. I've sat through all of those. Like, I've interviewed for the government and there was only one person in the room who knew anything about technology, and the other four were executives or human resources people. There's a whole spectrum of opportunity here, and what we've talked about is the conventional, the normal interview process. But quite honestly, if you're me, go and look for the not normal jobs. Get an interview in a bar and have a hell of a good time doing it.
Never had that. I've interviewed a lot. I've never had anyone at a bar for an interview. I would love that. That would work.
Now, in all seriousness, several companies nowadays will invite you to a function with a group of other people. If you get through the first phase well, you'll head out for lunch with the team and see what everyone else thinks of you. That seems to be more and more common, especially in smaller companies where they're very concerned with the personality fit that you would bring to the team and to the team dynamic. So you may be in a much less formal setting where it won't be so much about your technical skills if they've vetted you that far. Now they just want to make sure everyone else kind of likes you. So I think that is more common, becoming more common in America.
You know what, Ethan, it's funny you bring that up, because when I went to Cisco Live this year for my first time, and I did miss you guys, just for reference, but Cisco invited me and a few other guys to a function that they were having, just like you said, informal. It was at a small place. It was maybe 30 people. And in the middle of the function, that guy that ends up being a director was like, you know, I think we need to get you on our team. And I just thought the guy was joking. But based on what you're saying, this could have been testing a culture fit. And that would make a lot of sense. And I didn't even know it until right now.
I have run into those situations as well. This is kind of a sidebar, but it's good to mention that in a sense, when you're meeting people and networking with folks at local tech events, or you're at a conference and you're going out to lunch with people, you could be having an informal interview at any given time, because you never know who you're running into and what their needs are. And people that like you, the next time they have a need, might think, oh, we should call thus and so because I met him and he was a cool person. Or I met her
God,
and I really think she'd
fit. My life just turned
into
a job interview. God, I'm so depressed.
But it does, just like we're trying to get people mentally prepared, that's a great thing to think about. Is like, remember that you could be getting interviewed, so 12 margaritas like you, Greg, may not be the best way to go today while you're with all these potentially new opportunities.
Well, let me just say, if you haven't got the job by the 12th Margariti, it doesn't really matter. You really haven't done this before, have you? You've got to think about these things. You've got to be ready for that, you know? Come on, pick up your game.
Now, Keith, this kind of segues into another point you made in the notes here, which is to relax, that this is just one interview. It's one chance of presumably many chances.
Yes. Let me say this, and this is going to be very different for some people. An interview is very much like a class. It is a one-time class. You should be taking notes on what they're asking you, on things that you failed to answer or you forgot the answer to, so that when you come out of that interview, you go back, you prepare, you fill in those gaps, and then the next interview, you find new gaps. Ultimately, five interviews down the line, assuming you know you have five over a one-year period or whatever the case may be, you're a much stronger candidate just in what you did for your own self-education through those classes than you would have been otherwise. But one thing I like to do is I like to either give me a new pen, new notebook, new shirt, something new that I really like, that really relaxes me and makes me feel more confident going into those interviews. And those help. That helps a lot.
Yeah. Another very practical point here is to take it easy on the fluids, especially yes. If you got a maybe a panel, it's going to be a longer interview, or you've got kind of a full schedule full of interviews. You don't want to be looking for a bathroom around every corner because you had an extra large coffee. So you're really awake for the interview, really awake and then agitated because you got a full bladder.
Yes. I know this is something that Joseph can help with, but he's the person who told me be ready for the panels. And I want to ask Joseph, how many times do guys have to get up and constantly run to the bathroom because they're nervous or maybe they drunk too much coffee or something? Does that happen a lot?
It doesn't happen very often. It happened to us about 2 weeks ago where a gentleman was extremely nervous and wound up going to the bathroom about five times during the interview. But it's actually pretty rare that happens. What I always tell people is that most of the interviewers are trying to make you feel comfortable. They will offer you constantly liquids throughout the whole interview process. So coming in, you might want to have an empty stomach just to make sure that as they're constantly handing you cups of water or coffee or soft drinks, that you're not going to float out of there by the end of the interview.
Exactly right.
I've got, there's one issue I really want to bring up here at this point, which is one that hasn't been asked a lot. This assumes that you actually want the job that you're going for. And one of the things that a lot of people don't think about, that there's two sides to risk. You might only be so excited about the job that you're being offered that you forget that what happens if that job goes wrong? What happens if that job's not right for you? What happens if the people there actually have bad breath, like Ethan just highlighted, right? An interview is your chance to get to know a little bit about the thing that is going to rule your life, your professional life, for the next 3 to 6 months. And it's your chance to start asking questions. That's the first side of it. The second side of it is that what happens is these days, if I'm interviewing you, I am probably going to hire you quite quickly. I don't want to waste a lot of time in interviews. I think people spend far too much time dicking around with interviews and deciding who's the right person. Because what they're thinking is I'm going to hire this person and it's got to be perfectly right because we'll never be able to get rid of them. In some countries, UK, Australia, certain Asian countries, it's much easier just to hire somebody, get them in for 2 weeks, and if they're no good, boot them the heck out, right? Because if you're no good, you're just no good. And you must want to be here, so I'm going to hire you but boot you out just as quickly if you don't turn out to be good. What's the risk to your career? What's the risk to your personal life? What's the risk to your financial position if you take a job and then 2 weeks later you get booted out? And that is a piece of recruitment that very, very few people actually ever talk about.
That's a tough one. As you were talking, I was thinking about that. It's similar to that here in California, that it's an at-will state, to where you can exit stage left, as I like to say, at any time, and the company can ask you to exit stage left at any time. So it's really tough. What happens though is on your resume, if you have several stops like that, it raises red flags to most interviewers, at least the ones that I've worked with, of course. Even if you're jumping around from job to job every 6 months, every year or something like that, outside of being a contractor, it still looks very questionable to most people that are reviewing your resume. So when you're looking at jobs, you want to think about how it's going to affect you over the long term. if you're not going to be in the consulting life.
And in my case, I've always used that ability. I've always been a freelancer, and I've moved on fairly rapidly, 3 to 6 months at a time. And I actually treat that as a feature because obviously I'm well experienced at fitting in fast and delivering results in a short period of time.
Sure. That's in your case, that's absolutely the right way to look at it. When we're looking at full-time employees, we're oftentimes looking for someone that's going to stay with us for the long term because we have so many projects and features and different things going on within the company, within the network, that we're hoping to find someone that's going to be there for a long time because you're spending so much money training them up. You don't want that knowledge base to walk out the door. Now, someone
spending
like yourself,
so much money recruiting them that you don't want them walking out the door and then having to spend it again.
This is very true.
Of course, Joseph, you are adding enormous value to the process and worth every penny.
That's the story I tell them anyway, so it's fantastic.
I just want to point out that I love companies who think they're going to hold on to staff forever because that's obviously automatically for me, that's a warning sign that there's a company that's very poorly attached to reality.
I agree with that. But you guys point this out, you know, repeatedly on Packet Pushers that basically the only people who stay in a position for a very long time are the people who don't have other options. And I think that's very true. But what you got to remember as well is if you've really invested into your career and you're really staying on top of technology and you're that well sought after network engineer, chances are by the time Greg gave me the boot, there are three more people that wish they could have had me instead of Greg anyway. So I just make one of those calls or I return one of those emails and we keep chugging along, so to speak.
Yeah, just to highlight that, as a general rule, if you've been with the same company for more than 5 years, you're probably a loser. Rule of thumb. That's not always true, but that's generally where I would be.
I'm looking for 5 years where I am, Greg. You're killing me over here.
Another point worth raising, kind of a practical one, is when you walk in the door on the day of the interview, be polite to everybody. And Keith, I'm looking at your notes here, and you make this great point. You never know if the receptionist has a say in how they felt about you as you interacted with them. Don't take nothing for granted. Make no assumptions. You don't know the roles people play and the impact they can have. So if you walk in and you're an obnoxious, rude person at the check-in, that could have been it. You may not have known it, but you could have been done right there.
You know, I would actually be surprised if you can find a company out there who doesn't interact with those secretaries or the person you check in with. There is some interaction like, what time did they get here? How did you feel about them? That's probably a normal conversation, and it's the first opportunity for you to set a good impression. Even if they normally don't interact, if you impress that secretary and she goes back to the person you interviewed with and says, hey, who was that guy that came in? And they say, oh, that was Keith McGlon. Like, well, he was a nice guy. Think about the impact that has internally. It's exceptional.
Hello again, listeners. This is Drew Conry Murray, and thanks to the magic of editing, I'm beaming in to share a message from our sponsor, Thousand Eyes. As your network expands to include cloud services, ISPs, and third-party providers, visibility diminishes. And that's a huge problem when you're running critical apps, websites, and services. Figuring out what's gone wrong and who's responsible can take hours, and in some cases, weeks. And what about planning ahead to avoid the issues in the first place? That's where Thousand Eyes comes in. Thousand Eyes gives you visibility into every network your company relies on, your corporate network, the internet, cloud service provider networks, all from one place. Thousand Eyes cloud agents are deployed in locations all across the globe, and enterprise agents provide additional visibility from within your own network. Together, these vantage points provide the most complete understanding of network topology, dependencies, and behavior. With Thousand Eyes, you can piece together multiple layers of network insight, from BGP routing and DNS to web server and layer 3 performance. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root causes of problems, including device faults, congestion, DDoS attacks, and more. You can share data and insights with your vendors and customers to resolve problems faster. And here's a special offer just for Packet Pushers listeners. Sign up for a free account at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers and choose a free Thousand Eyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before. Thousand Eyes, network intelligence you can see. And once more, here's Greg and Ethan.
So we've gone through a lot of practical things you can do the day before and then the day of the interview, that big interview day when you're walking in and you're going to go through it. So, Keith, I think a good way to conclude this section would be some questions that you maybe have been asked or that you might ask if you're doing an interview, and just kind of give us like a bullet list of some of these questions, and then a little bit of color around them so that there's some context. We know why we'd be getting asked those questions and what to think about.
Okay, I can do that. One of the things that I always like to know is, what is the goal of the redesign? Or if they're redesigning the network, understand why they want to do it. Something else I'll ask is, when was the last time they upgraded or did a redesign? This gives you an idea of how long this new design is probably going to be in place. You want to ask them, is there a cloud component? And if so, how is that being used? Because that's going to factor into a skill set that you may need. And you can also ask them, what's going to be automated? Where's the SDN fit? And if they haven't thought about it, then you're introducing that subject to the table, which is a great thing to know.
Questions that I, as a person being interviewed, am asking the interviewer potentially?
Absolutely. These are absolutely what the interviewee is asking the interviewer, because it gives you an idea of how they've been operating to date. If they haven't done an upgrade in the past 10 years, then it's probably going to be 10 years before they want to do another upgrade. And that's important for you to know. Another thing that comes up is when troubleshooting questions appear, make sure you express that you have a process. Make sure that you say things like, I follow the OSI model, or I do inside out, or I do outside in. Just let them know that you're consistent about that process, because that consistency is what they're looking for. They want to know that you're not going to just randomly go take a look at the network, randomly go take a look at a problem, that you're going to be consistent.
Yeah, just a little comment there. It also shows you're experienced as a troubleshooter as well. If you just start throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something works out, you know, you're looking for a methodology behind your troubleshooting that shows you've been there before, and you know that most of the time the freaking cable's unplugged and that's why it's down. It's nothing. Rarely is it something more complex than that.
Yeah, I agree.
And then one last point, Keith, that I wanted to add is, don't forget, when you're an interviewee, you're interviewing the company as well. So don't be shy about asking questions. Have a list of questions in hand that you are going to ask. So yes, there's those questions that are technical in nature and show you're engaged and have some insight into a project that the company might be doing. But also, you want to be asking about the company with questions like, you know, what's the benefit system perhaps, or what would the on-call rotation be like, or how can I interact with people that aren't on the networking team? If you're interviewing for a networking job, can I just go over and talk to the virtualization people, or is there like a chain of command I got to go through? You know, but whatever might be important to you about the job, they're going to expect you to have questions. So go in with a list of prepared questions. Don't just sit there when they go, do you have any questions for us, and go, no,
you have to have some
think about things.
You have to have some questions. There is not one interview you're ever going to be in that is not going to trigger some kind of question internally. You're saying, well, what did he mean by that? Or, oh yeah, that brings up a good area I want to know more about. So yeah, you should have some questions that have developed from the interview.
Joseph, do you usually counsel people to have questions and give them some guidance on what to ask?
Absolutely. So some of the questions I make sure to tell everyone to ask is, what can you learn from the manager or the team, right? So you want to make sure that you're going to be bettering yourself and your career, and that you're working with smart people. You might want to ask what some of the biggest accomplishments of the manager are, or the team members are. The employees like most about working there. Maybe what can you do to ensure that the manager or the team feels that you're the best person for the job? So those are just really good questions in general that you can ask almost anyone throughout the interview that will elicit really good responses and help you understand the company from a different perspective.
Well, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on the Packet Pushers podcast today, sharing all these thoughts and tips about being interviewed and then doing some interviewing yourselves. And let's go around the table here. And if you would, please share with us how people can follow you on the internet. Keith, are you on Twitter or have a blog, anything like that?
I am on Twitter. You will very rarely see a tweet, but I follow a lot of guys, and every now and then I'll read. You can add me at KW McGlon. It's KWMCGLON on Twitter, and I'm keith.mcglon@gmail, and that's about it.
Great. Thanks a lot, Keith. And Joseph, same question for you.
Sure. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. More than happy to connect with anyone. You'll find me at Joseph Warren. I'm currently at GoPro, but you're more than welcome to connect with me. I'm happy to look at your LinkedIn profiles, give you any advice that I might have about the process or interviewing or anything like that.
Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to chat with us today. Mr. Farrell, from the land of 3G bandwidth poverty, how can people follow you?
Just one final thing is that we haven't touched on today is that getting a job is a numbers game. You don't have one interview and get the job. You normally got to have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 interviews to get a job. Make sure you schedule your emotional roller coaster ride to last the journey until you move on. And it might take weeks or months, even months, to find your next job. Just stick with it. The most important thing is that you change jobs and give Joseph a chance to stay in business. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com and on the Twitters as at etherealmind. And thanks very much to the guys for joining in the show today, Mr. Banks.
And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. My blog is ethancbanks.com. And of course, this has been the Packet Pushers podcast. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. And by the way, you too can blog with Packet Pushers. Send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know that you're interested and we'll get you set up. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and please rate us on iTunes. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.